In addition to being a husband and father to identical six-year-old twin boys, Hakeem is an executive career and leadership coach. Prior to launching his own coaching practice, he spent nearly two decades working with senior leaders developing professional and executive education programs at institutions such as the American Bar Association, Harvard Law School, and most recently, the University of Miami Law School. Throughout his career, he's been responsible for managing teams, big and small, international and domestic, always intimately involved in some aspect of coaching, advising, or professional development. Hakeem is an NLP-certified executive coach who incorporates his own love of people and a rich experience into his commitment of raising the awareness of professionals to effectively lead themselves and others with clarity, confidence, and compassion. Everybody give a big warm welcome to my friend and yours, Hakeem Lakhdar.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, man. We're just two dudes rapping right now.
Yeah.
B and I, about a year and a half ago.
Yep.
Yeah, we kind of both were going for the same position with it being on. BNI is a business networking international group, and they pride themselves on having one industry, so you lock out your competition. We're both coaches with an overall reach of business coaching. But I think I liked you a lot, and I think that we just meshed, and you liked me a lot. We said, same. You know what? Let's have a lane. I think we're stronger together.
Yep.
And I think not a lot of coaches, a lot of industries, a lot of people would do that. So that says a lot about your character.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. It was obvious. The first time we met, I knew right away. I mean, there's plenty of business out there. And there was no doubt that, like you said, we'd be stronger together. And what I always loved was actually educating people about the distinction between what you did and what I did. Yeah. Because while there's overlap and it's very complementary, it's also quite different,
too. It is quite different, right. Yeah. Exactly. Especially when we were both really at the same starting point of our careers, too. Because although you have been coaching forever.
Yeah.
I was a coach in real life, you know, as an executive, you lead people, but I sold a company back then about 6 months prior to that and just started this coaching career, and you had just left the security of an institution life to go out on your own with a high rope, you know, without any net. So we were both vulnerable. I think we both felt more secure with each other.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I think that had something to play with it, too.
Absolutely. No, I think... You know, and you appreciating what coaching is, me knowing what coaching is, we were sort of like peer coaching each other through that journey. And I think there was a lot of value to that, even though maybe you and I weren't just blasting referrals back and forth, like maybe some other people in the chapter were. The benefit that we got was actually the support that we were providing for one another on those early, in those early days of the journey.
Yeah. And really just, comparing notes. I mean, look, the show is a slight edge advantage. When you go out on your own, you better find it.
Yeah.
You better find your advantage because there's a sea of coaches and what's your jam and who's your tribe.
Yeah.
And we're trying to feel that out. Not having the longest runway with a family and twin boys and everything, I'm in a different position. My kids are grown. Yep. I had sold a company, so I had a couple of shekels, as they say, in the bank. But I created a ton of other roadblocks in my way because I have squirrel syndrome, shiny object syndrome. So I created my own. So I think we both had this mountain that we were climbing. And, yeah, being together gave us both like a sense of at least we're going the right direction. It might not be up. But even if you're on a mountain and you're going to the left or the right, as long as that one foot is going further than the other foot, you're heading up.
It was forward.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about people talking about failing forward and, you know, I don't think there was any failure in our journey. I think it was all learning opportunities, all growth. But for me, the key was, again, like you said, I've been coaching my whole career. I
mean, yes.
I was talking to someone the other day and they asked me the question like, well, so when did you start coaching? And I jokingly said, when I was seven, you know, because I was always that guy. I was that kid. When someone got picked last for kickball, Next thing I knew, I was saying, let me bow out this game. I'm going to walk the fence line with this guy.
We're gonna have
a conversation about how being picked last for kickball doesn't define you. But the reality is, even though you've been doing it for so long and you know it and it's what you love to do, there's the business side of it.
Right.
I mean, there's the inner work mindset shift that has to occur when you're a salaried employee, a W-2 employee, and you all of a sudden decide you're going to go out and eat what you kill, and you got to bring in the business.
Yeah, and all you got is a limp string and hardly an arrow.
Right, right.
You got to sharpen it.
Putting it together with gum and popsicle sticks.
Right, and so you know, when you said that story about seven years old and doing that, I've always been an accountable person. I mean, I have made a lot of mistakes, but I've always been really good at accountability. So I remember, I mean, you took me right back. I mean, I was playing kickball. Remember that with rubber balls? They had that distinct sound, especially when they slammed you in the face.
Yeah.
I could still hear it ringing. But I said the F word. I dropped an F-bomb on the playground, on the diamond, you know. And our coach was a woman, and she was maybe out there getting rounding some kids up or something. And I dropped an F-bomb. And, you know, everybody, literally third grade. And everybody was like, "Whoa, we're gonna tell Miss whatever, Mrs. Johnson," and she came up and I stepped right out and I told her. I said, "I just said the F word." I said, and she said, "Get back in line." That's all. But I was like, "Ah,
yeah, you owned it."
I was like, "Yeah, man, you're gonna snitch on me.
Mm-hmm.
Hold my beer."
Yep.
Right. And then I just loved that nothing ever happened.
Yeah. Well, there's something to be said for that, because I mean, I think even. You know, as a lesson for life or a lesson for leaders.
Yeah.
If you're not being truthful, if you're not being honest, if you're not being authentic, and you're trying to recreate your reality, your image, your persona constantly, people aren't going to trust you.
No, that's where the authenticity comes from.
Yeah.
When you're authentic. So let's start over.
Sure.
From the beginning, because you've got a very colorful path to coaching.
Yeah.
Before you got into coaching as a profession, just rattle off some of the things, because this is your slight advantage, that you've been in some really unique spots. Not a lot of people can say it, and some of them are some of my favorite things.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be the unknown, Lee Majors, not in $6 Million Man, but the one after it. I won't steal your thunder, but you know what I'm talking about probably. Yeah. Tell us about some of that unique travel and work that you did.
Yeah, no, I've had the good fortune of living many lives. So, I mean, I was, when you start from 7 years old, then in middle school, I was a peer counselor, and I was like the only boy in the class, and I had this jacket that said peer counselor on it, and I was walking around counseling my classmates and doing conflict mediation between buddies of mine who had just been fighting in the lunchroom, you know, hours
that's
later.
That's just innate then.
Right. It's just, it was wild. And people were like, "Why are you in that?" I'm like, "I don't know. I just feel drawn to it, you know?"
Wow.
So I'm doing that in middle school, and then you fast forward to high school, and I'm in JROTC. Was in JROTC for 4 years, the entire time I was in high school. And everyone's like, "So, you know, what do you want to do in the military?" I was like, "Oh, I don't have any aspirations to go into the military." I have family members in the military, fully support all of our brothers and sisters in the military. And all of my friends from JROTC use it as a springboard. But me, the draw was the leadership aspect.
I love
of
that
it.
Part of it. Yeah.
You know, it was amazing for 4 years in high school. In addition to the stuff we shouldn't have been doing in high school, I got time to really focus on growing myself as a leader. And I love that. I mean, I think that was.
And where was that? So that was here in South Florida?
Yeah, right here at Western High School. Yeah.
Oh, Western.
And I love that. And I just knew that I was always going to be sort of a lifelong leadership junkie. And while I recognized that, I also knew that I wanted to kind
of
dabble.
Bit of an adventure.
I wanted to dabble in things. So I lived in Morocco for a year. I my senior year of high school, went and lived in Morocco for a part of the year and you know, did a little sort of gap year before I went to college. And then I've always played music and ended up meeting a buddy of mine. We ended up starting an acoustic duo.
Right.
And then we were playing all of these local things up in Tallahassee at Florida State for game days and Greek functions. And then we started traveling the Southeast. And next thing you knew, we were down in Key West.
Yeah, at my favorite place. I came, I drank, I don't remember.
That's right. Irish Kevin's. Irish Kevin's. There on Duval Street.
The funnest bar on Duval Street.
It is a blast. I mean, all day, every day.
Yeah.
There's nothing but fun in there. And it's
no stops.
Blasting out to the sidewalks. It's amazing.
It's the closest thing to New Orleans that Florida has, I think. Yeah. Where that's at. Non-stop mentality where you can't take a break or else people will just go to another bar.
Yeah. I mean, our shows were 4 hours long.
Yeah,
four hour shows. I mean, I would get up off the bar stool, regardless of how much I had drank, and my legs would be all cramped up just sitting there on a bar stool.
We did that in Nashville, too, on Broadway. When you play down in Nashville, they don't let you take a break, and you only have 15 minutes to get to your next gig and set up and start playing again.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people just shift.
Yeah.
You know?
It was an amazing opportunity. I mean, we were down there for a spring break casually. my senior year in college, and we went up and played in between, you know, one of the shows swapping out, and we said, oh, we'll fill that gap while they're setting up. So we went up and played a song, and you know,
yeah,
some silly sing along song, and Kevin of Irish Kevin said, hey, you guys are pretty good. Maybe you guys come back and I'll be a featured act. And I said, hey, sounds good to me.
That's how you became a featured act at Irish Kevin's, by just saying, well, there's another lesson, right? While they're setting up, you saw an opportunity.
Yeah.
Not only I'm sure you didn't do it for a job, I don't think. You're like,
no,
I'd like some stage time. I like some spotlight, and I want to entertain. Get up there and not asking for anything, you know, just get up there and play, and bam.
Yeah,
and how long did that moment last for now?
Seize your moment.
That lasted forever, didn't it?
Well, we were there for a few months. I mean, we had the option of staying there longer term.
Yeah.
But then the day that he offered us a full-time gig was the day I was admitted to a master's PhD program in Indiana.
Oh, boy.
So all of a sudden, I'm juggling, okay, the professional side
back
of me.
Back to real world.
The professional side of me and the entertainment side of me. So I said, okay, look, I can always play music. Let's go to grad school. So I went to grad school in Indiana.
Wow.
But then when I came back, I still had that bug. And I said, yeah, man, am I going to go back down to Irish Kevin's and play music? Or, you know what? Maybe I'll try my hand at acting.
In Miami.
Yeah.
We're not known for acting.
Right.
Other than Telemundo.
Right, right.
And so where'd you end up?
Yeah, I ended up Spanish soap operas. Next thing I knew, I was doing stair falls in short feature films.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I was driving, stunt driving.
Stuntman,
you know, had
yeah.
extensions in my hair and doing, you know, playing Mario on El Cuerpo de Deseo. And like, I mean, it was just wild.
And you spoke how much Spanish?
Zero Spanish. And they gave me speaking lines. I mean, that was the best part.
They just walked you right through the dialect and
they said, can you say vamos? I said, I can say vamos. They said, can you say no te muevas? I can say no te muevas. Can you say al piso? I said, yeah. They're like, all right, squad leader. I was like, nice. All right, there we go.
Oh, my gosh. So that was one of my favorite shows, that The Unknown Stuntman.
Yeah.
Lee Majors. He was still married to, I think, Farrah Fawcett back then. He's jumping off buildings and riding that big, cool truck. Holy moly, that was a good show. Yeah. And guess what I started doing? Jumping off my roof with a sheet.
Yep.
You know, thinking, you know, taking our bikes and riding them off the bridges and the canals. And,
yep.
You know, I mean, crazy stuff that, thank God there were no cameras, video cameras back then, because there's so much evidence. They call evidence nowadays.
Yeah.
Evidence of ignorance.
I was old enough. I was also old enough at that age when I was doing stunts to recognize that my body had a very short shelf life. And that if I were to continue doing this, I wasn't going to make it. Key West, I wouldn't have survived
much longer. No, because of the alcohol. And
just the party scene down there was insane. Loved it, but that's a short-term thing. And then acting in stunts, it's a – what I talk to my clients a lot about is – vision and having clarity around your vision. And that vision can be short-term, long-term, vision for your life, vision for your team, vision for your product, your service, whatever it might be, your company, your business. And my vision, the things I was doing were for fun. They were for experience. They were for exposure.
Yeah.
They were for growth and expansion, but they weren't in service of my vision. My vision was being a family man, was being a husband, was being a father, was creating a stable life and community that we could grow up in.
And I guess the smart thing is that you did it before you had the family. Now,
that's right.
You see a lot of this where you get, especially in Key West, where I have so much experience, spent years there, where you meet these guys and they come off stage, and being a drummer, I'm magnetically drawn to these, and you get in a conversation, they're like, yeah, my family is up in Tampa, you know, and it's like, I could see coming to Key West to make a lot of money working, but you're working on tips.
Yeah.
Where's your family, man? Where's your head? You know, passion, music is a passion. It's not a career that you leave your family for to play in a dive bar in Key West. Oh, how long have you been here? A couple of weeks? No, about 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my God. So that you did it the right way.
Yeah. I mean, and to each their own. I mean, I think at the end of the day, everyone's got their own journey, but I had the good fortune again to explore these avenues and these paths early on in life. And I surrounded myself with good people. So I had good friends, good family, even my acting mentor, who's a phenomenal guy down here, amazing South Florida actor, very well known, Anthony Carone. He's, you know, we're still very close. And we had a great conversation one night, and he was saying, like, let me pick your brain. What are you trying to achieve in this industry? What do you hope to accomplish?
Yeah.
What's
because
your vision?
At the end of the day, isn't it called show business?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it's all the same. Yeah. We're all connected in this business thing.
That's right.
And even in your family life, you got to treat your household sometimes like a business.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you get through, and then you went back, you got, you know, really more travel in you, right? Bouncing a lot of ironic stories coming up with the family and the birth of your sons and where you met your wife and all. But you're settling down. What is it about that inert coaching, that inert wanting to help other people do better? Where do you think it comes from, and what is your biggest gratitude about it?
It's a great question. I think that comes from the support and connection I had to family growing up, but the desire to do something about it.
Yeah.
Which is what compassion is. Compassion is sympathy and empathy compelling you to then do something to help.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean, you can feel sympathetic, you can feel empathetic, but the compassion is having those feelings and then being compelled to do something about it. To
and
help.
Any, it's in part.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that piece came, I think, for me from this awareness around my hypersensitivity as a young man.
Yeah. We have that in common too.
Yeah. I mean, that for me was a shortcoming much of my life. I saw that as a fault. You know, don't be so sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, you're so sensitive.
I still have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I looked at that. I had to look at that and sort of, you know, the cave you fear holds the treasure you seek kind of thing. I had to do some of that shadow work and figure out, why was this such a trigger for me? Why was I so bothered by being so sensitive? And then I realized that sensitivity actually, when managed properly and in the right environment, was a superpower, was truly something that allowed me to connect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a slight edge.
Yeah.
More than a slight edge in what I do. It allowed me to have access to people.
But until you harnessed it,
that's right.
It wasn't an advantage.
That's right.
It's a disadvantage.
It was.
Yeah,
it was.
Detriment.
Yeah, it was a vulnerability.
But when you learn how to take those weaknesses and overcome them, and then you get a couple things with that. First, you get to grow, but also you get the right to tell other people how you did it. You can't tell them how they can do it, but you can now say, I've been there. So there's the empathy. And then you're connecting in the authenticity. The vulnerability part of that is never comes until you get over it. You never see somebody vulnerable about their shortcomings until they overcome them or know how to harness them. And yeah, we slip back into those shortcomings. But when you've overcome them or come up with a system or worked really hard for months or years to overcome them, it's a lot easier to be vulnerable about admitting those things. Mm-hmm. So I think that gives you a lot more that authenticity and credibility to lead. Yeah. Because you can't lead without a blemish. Yeah. You've got to be worn, tested, battle-tested to lead.
Yeah. Thank you. And I think that it's widely or should be widely understood that leaders can only take their teams as far as they're willing to go, as far as they've taken themselves. And the same is true about coaches. You know that. I mean, we take people to where we've been ourselves.
Right.
And we can only go as far as we've allowed ourselves to go. So if we're holding back, if we're not allowing ourselves to lean into the process and to really embrace that work, we're not going to be effective in leading others through that.
No, because there's nothing there's no stories there.
Yeah.
I mean, the best way to lead people and to teach a lesson or to teach any new skill is through stories. Yeah. And if you don't have any stories, firsthand knowledge of stuff that happened or ways you've overcome things, That's a tough road. You're going to have a hard time having people follow you. So what's next? What's next for Akeem? What's next? How's the family unit handling this transition onto your own? Because you're home now all the time. Sometimes you travel. I know you've been to England recently. That was a trip. Tell us a little bit about that. Yeah. And then how's that support system there?
Yeah, no, my wife has been fantastic. I mean, she and I, from our early days of dating, have always been incredibly effective in our communication.
Yeah.
Communication is key for me. I probably bang her over the head with that, you know, constantly. And I think she understands why. It comes from a place of love and a place of transparency and again, of planning and partnership and all of that. So when I was making the decision to eventually transition and build a career around a business I was going to have to build from the ground up.
Yeah.
We had a conversation, and she had been home with the boys for a long time. Obviously, we all...
She was a professional before then,
she was, yeah. She was an admissions professional at a law school up in New England where she and I met and had the boys. And when we decided that this was what I was going to do, because this is what I was truly meant to do, we had to have that conversation. Yeah. She said, I've been home with the boys. We've navigated this challenging few years of the pandemic. I'm ready to go back to work. Why don't I go back to work for a little bit? I'll take care of things like the benefits and health insurance and all that stuff that you're leaving behind to start your business. And the boys are now of an age where they're starting school. They were in kindergarten when I started this.
Yep.
They're going into first grade on Monday, which is kind of wild. And what we realized was the only way that this could be possible is if we do it together. So when you mentioned England, I had the great opportunity to go to England and help facilitate and participate in a leadership retreat right there, you know, quintessential seaside cottage, beautiful sort of castle-esque type of
surreal
venue. We were there for the entire week, meals prepared, really deep inner work. We talked about values and mission statements and personal compass and all that stuff. And it was amazing. I could not have been present in the way that I was if I didn't feel like things were being handled at home.
Sure.
And Caitlin had that on lockdown. So
And you're lucky because not a lot of people have that support and the team. It's really a team. And you got the two boys. And twins are a challenge because it's not like we had one and then we had 3 years to get the other one. And of course, they're not different. They are not the same, I should say. But having twins, it's just like double, bam, everything once, all at once.
Especially
like,
as new parents.
Yeah.
We could have a whole podcast. Yeah. We could have a whole podcast around the twin experience.
They're going to put the skills of yours to work.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
but so with that, now that said, you've come back, and where is your business now, and where would you like it to go? What are some of the things that you're looking for? Some clients, what space are you are you living in?
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to say that despite even the summer lull, which I think you probably experienced a little bit of, just because naturally people take vacations, they're sort of less accessible. You know, there's this sort of ramp up at the first of the year into spring so they can make the most of spring. Then school ends for kids, people with kids, people with resources take vacations, they're traveling.
Yeah.
Then now we're getting into August and we're getting back into this sort of like, let's crush it this fall. Business has been booming.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been going very well.
Incredible.
I mean, I started the year with a sort of manifestation journal, and it was, I have a full coaching practice with a wait list of clients. I have a full coaching practice with a wait list of clients. And I'm sitting here with you with a full coaching practice and a wait list of clients.
Yes. That's amazing.
I mean, truly.
Yeah. And where is your sweet spot? So for somebody listening, what are the words that somebody might say when you're having a conversation that says, you know, you really need to talk to Hakeem? What are they saying about their needs?
Yeah. You know, I find myself, even though like my tagline is helping to raise the awareness of professionals, I tend to be working with people who are already quite self-aware.
Right.
They're already aware. They're committed to that process. They're committed to developing themselves, to improving themselves. They're either leaders already or they're aspiring leaders.
Right.
And what they're often talking about, if you overhear someone having a conversation, they're talking about how they want to be better. I feel like I'm getting it, but I'm just missing this one thing.
Yeah.
Or, man, I feel like I'm good, but I want to go from good to great. Or there's something.
That might be a good book, right?
It's a great book. Thank you, Jim Collins. But I think there is something about their journey that they have gotten to a place where they've kind of plateaued a little bit.
Okay.
And that could be financially, but most of the time it's on this journey of self-actualization.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to better themselves. You know, there's that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. You get to the very top of that pyramid and it's self-actualization. People think once you get to the top, you've reached the top and then you get your bag of like gold coins or something. That's not how it works.
Right.
You get to the top, it's a mountain with no top.
Right.
You know, this personal development, this leadership journey that we're all on in life, it's a constant. It's a
right.
Constant,
so I think there's
process.
A lot of benefits working with that kind of people because a lot of people like the startup coach or the entrepreneur minded person who just started their own business. But a lot of those people don't realize how much work it takes, not only to be a leader and to put the time in, put the energy in, but also to listen to direction. And you say, I'm going to tell you some things that successful people do. I'm going to give you some things to read, you know, and if they don't do it, it's hard. So when you have somebody who's plateaued, it shows that they've got to that plateau. They understand the grind. They understand the cost. And so I would imagine that those kind of clients would be more prone to listening to advice or following direction. Or
yeah, they are. I mean, and look, this isn't to say that I'm not willing to have conversations with people who may not know that they need a coach. But if you think about it, just sort of common in a matter of common sense, those people aren't the ones running looking for a coach because they don't even know that
they don't know what
need.
They don't know.
That's
right.
Right.
Yeah.
But I have found myself in conversation casually with someone. I'm just kind of like, oh, you need a coach, you know, and just as like sort of like a friendly jab, you know, and then, yeah. And all of a sudden there's kind of like, what does
Hello.
That mean? And then I'll ask some sort of, you know, casually challenging questions,
yeah.
You know, depending on the situation, and they'll realize, wow, I never really thought about that. And that's what it is. It's about changing perspective. It's about right. exploring new ways of doing things. And some leaders are really, really good at leading, but they've gotten to a place where they need some new ideas. They need to be challenged. Who's going to challenge them?
Right. That's the thing. That's the fun in life, the challenge. Nobody cares about accomplishments. I mean, individually, everyone wants to see people accomplish. But in reality, the accomplishment, it means it's over. And then the human condition isn't prone or built for being over. It likes to be challenged. So when you don't have a challenge in front of you, after 10 minutes of accomplishing whatever it is, you're looking for another challenge if you're healthy, you know, and you want to have that mindset. So you can work with people nationally over Zoom. Mm-hmm. You're in person. You're down here in South Florida.
Yeah. I have a lot internationally. Of international clients. Yep. I think, you know, go back to your other point too. People ask me often, well, why would you choose to work with senior professionals? And when I was at Harvard Law School, we were doing executive education for a lot of these senior lawyers who were coming in from around the world. And I'd watch them sit in the seat. They're just people. One,
people.
They're just people. And two, they were having a lot of these aha, mind-blowing, light bulb moments themselves. And they're quite accomplished. They're senior leaders who have been in the industry or in their positions for a long time. And very basic things are being introduced in a different way. And all of a sudden, their minds are blown.
And it's because they're in a cocoon, you know, in an echo chamber a lot of times. Yeah. So, and also my new word, it came a couple of years ago, it's still my new favorite word though. It's called dialectic. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of finding the truth in opinions. Mm. So when you're having conversations with people that you're not used to talking with about your career and somebody who's got your career advancement in mind, you're going to have these different conversations that create this truth within you that you've never thought of before. And it's just words and it's not platitudes, but it's conversation that leads that your thoughts and my thoughts create a third thought.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you take those thoughts and what do they become, right? They become feelings, and then feelings push your actions, and then actions become behavior.
That's right.
And it can't happen unless you're talking to these people outside of your little bubble and looking to grow and advance and be better for other people.
Yeah.
It has to be an extrinsic.
That's why I tell people that I don't work industry specific. I mean, despite my nearly two decades in the legal profession, working with lawyers, part of the reason why I launched my business was so I could have access and other professionals could have access to me that weren't only in the legal profession, because I don't need to know your industry to help you as a coach.
Right.
I don't even need to be at your level or have been in your role to still know how to have a conversation with you that's going to spark questions and conversation that are going to lead you to a new perspective and a new approach and expansion and understanding.
So do you think that's one of your superpowers, is understanding how to ask good open-ended questions that create those sparks?
Yeah, and it comes from sensitivity. I mean, the sensitivity piece is another way of saying that is receptivity. I mean, because I'm receptive to, you know what, I don't feel like he's actually sharing with me how he actually feels, or she's holding back. I'm going to ask a question that's going to uncover that.
Yeah.
It's a challenging question. It's an uncomfortable question. But guess what?
I love those.
On the other side of that is gold.
Yeah.
Pure
gold. Yeah, that's
gold.
Where it is. That's
and,
where it is.
And being able to ask those questions requires a level of sort of like X-ray vision.
Yeah.
And sensitivity to the person that you're sitting in front of to then say, look, I love you. I care about you. I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
let's get to the bottom of this.
And how do people get a hold of you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I have a lot of great connections on LinkedIn. Yeah. So anytime on LinkedIn, Hakeem Lakhdar. But you can email me at Hakeem@LakhdarCoaching.com.
Yeah, we'll put all that stuff
of course.
In the descriptions and everything.
And I'm out and about. I mean, I try to do as much as I can outside the home. I love my boys. I love my wife. But it's nice to get out of the house every now and then.
Yeah, coming here in the studio.
Especially when you're working from home. And most of my clients are remote. So I'm doing a lot of my coaching via Zoom.
It's become a pejorative Zoom.
Well, you know, it's funny, and you've heard me make this joke, but I often tell people that when I first started coaching prior to the pandemic, if I had told someone, "Oh, sorry, I'm not going to be able to meet up with you today. Oh, I'm going to send you a Zoom link." They would have been like, "What am I paying you for?
Right.
What the heck? What am I paying you for?"
It's
versus
funny.
Now,
how fast is
if
the
I
were norm?
To tell someone, "Hey, you got to put pants on, you got to come see me." They'd be like, "Oh, man, that's going to take half an hour
I'll
there,
pay double
half
not
an hour
to.
Back, just send me a Zoom link," right. You know? And fortunately, Zoom has created an opportunity for me to connect with people in my network, clients all over the world, and it can still be quite powerful, but there's no
but it's
replacing.
It's nice to have both.
Yeah, there's no replacing in person.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you came in the studio because we're having, I think I've had my fourth show, only one Zoom.
Yeah.
Which, and I have a couple lined up. They're just getting out rolling. This is episode number 4. So, of course, they're going to be heavily Zoom going forward, but or not Zoom, but, you know, online.
Yeah.
But I cherish the in-studio. So,
same.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy.
That's it. That's all we're gonna give you today of Hakeem. I'm sure he'll be back again to talk about more of his slight edge advantage. And we welcome you to check out all of our other episodes, all 3 other episodes right now. But by the time you see this, hopefully there's 50 or 100. We've got some really, really cool guests coming up in the future. Like it, subscribe, share, comment. I need to know what your slight advantage is. Let us know in the comments. Let us know what you liked about this and reach out to Hakeem immediately if you need help with your leadership skills.